south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, with all the countries I've been in and all the people I've known, and all the gringos and expats I've helped out over the years, I can tell you I've seen lots and lots, tons of passport pictures. The question is, have you ever met anyone that looks worse than their passport picture? How come it always looks like you're on speed, have hepatitis, or nursing a hangover? Now, you might think it's kind of odd to bring it up, but I've never heard a man, a male, you know, there's still males around that identify as males, right? I've never met a single one who's ever complained about his passport picture. To him, it's just a picture. What I mean is, our immigration lawyer tells us to go get a passport picture taken, and we go and do it. It's done. No muss and fuss, no complaints, nothing. However, when women go get their passport pictures taken, it's a completely different story. I've never met a woman yet who actually liked her passport picture. Generally, there's a wince and a, ooh, can I take that again? In fact, every woman I've ever known who happened to show me her passport for whatever reason instantly gets defensive and comes up with all kinds of excuses why that picture is so shitty. Meanwhile, the wokesters and women's libbers will swear up and down that there's no difference between men and women. Well, I can tell you, as for me, I'm over 50, identify as a male, at least today I do. And still, by the way, waiting for my period. After all, the latest word from the woke medical establishment is that men can have babies and periods. Then again, it may have hit me and I didn't recognize it, like a mild case of COVID. I'm waiting on male menopause, too. Think I'm getting a hot flash right now. Or not. Anyway, show me a guy that complains about his passport picture, and I'll show you a guy that's most likely gender fluid. Just saying. All right, let's start with an interesting email from Clint in Texas. He says, Johnny, they all talk about fake news and people trying to defame you or sabotage you for whatever reason on the internet. Even for a joke, people will slam you. Though these days, you can get in all kinds of trouble for telling a joke, even a lighthearted, simple one. Anyway, Johnny, we're talking in a previous show about all those scams in Mexico that show up on your phone as loan shark apps. You were talking about how easily people give up names and dates so that the scammers can do that. Odd that you mentioned it, because it happened to me too. I recently had a loan shark app request, a pop-up window, in Spanish, and I live in Texas. So those scammers have a reach well beyond Mexico, looks like. They're targeting the Latino population and Spanish speakers in the States, too. As for me, my parents saddled me with a very distinctive, one-of-a-kind first name, Clint. It seems not a week will go by without someone saying a Dirty Harry make my day comment. Hey, Clint, make my day. Ha ha, I'm so sick of that. As you've probably surmised, my dad was a big Clint Eastwood fan. And my mom, well, she went along with it because she got to name my brother and my sister. Of course, my last name is not Eastwood. If you read this on your show, please don't mention it. It's a Spanish last name from Spain, not from Mexico or Latin America. But one day, not so long ago, I Googled myself, my whole name, and I found out I was living in multiple cities simultaneously, alone and with other people who were and were not related to me. And in that Google search, I found out I've been involved in many court actions in two different states that I've never been in. And my name is included in a class action lawsuit for a hospital I've never stepped foot in either. In a state, Michigan, I've never visited. It was so inaccurate, I thought I'd be safe from scammers. But no, since I've received at least one pop-up app request from a loan shark. In Spanish. And I barely speak Spanish. I'm about a 2 on a 10 scale. I took it in high school. Forgot most of it. I guess that's what I get for being an early adopter to social media. I'm on a million lists now. Though I've cut myself off most social media platforms. I did that a couple of years ago. After, unfortunately, I became a victim of ID and credit card fraud. Took me about a year and 100 hours to unravel that, and it still comes back to haunt me on occasion. And I was never one to randomly give out my dats or email address just for this and that free offer. I can only imagine how scary it is for idiot kids and adults who randomly give out their dats to anyone giving a free offer. As far as I can see it, if a guy like me who takes a ton of precautions on the internet can be a victim of ID theft, credit card fraud, and just recently get targeted by loan shark scammers from Mexico, I'd say we're all cooked. That plan B is looking better all the time. Unfortunately, I have loads of debt and not nearly old enough to get Social Security or a pension yet. I'm holding on, though. I'm 19 years, 27 days, 45 minutes, and 27, 26, 25, 24, 23, etc., seconds away from getting Social Security. I'm not too obsessed about it, am I? Then he says, if I cashed out now and got the hell out of Dodge, I'd have about $20,000 in cash, which isn't enough to get out of Dodge or feel secure about it if I make the leap. I guess every night I'd go to bed worrying about how long 20 G's would last. What do you suggest I do, Johnny? A guy like me, way too young to qualify for Social Security or a pension, yet scared as hell if I don't get out soon, I'll go down with the Titanic. Come on, Johnny. I need some advice. Make my day. Signed, Clint. Well, thanks for that, Clint. I'll try to ease your mind a bit. You don't know how many emails I get from people who say pretty much the same thing. I got this limited amount of cash, a small little nest egg. They say I got to get the hell out of Dodge, but is X amount of cash enough to do so? Of course, for one thing, it all depends on your definition of small. Is it 5, 10, 20, 25K? Oddly enough, I even get emails from frightened people saying they have a small nest egg of a $500,000 to $1,000,000 and they're worried it won't last. Well, here's my rule of thumb for moving to Latin America, having a plan B, and how much dough you'll really need if you decide to move off the gringo tourist trail. First, think about whatever your nest egg is and multiply it by 4. In other words, if you've got 20 grand, multiplied by 4, you get 80 grand. So your 20 grand down here will go as far as 80 grand will go up in the States. If you got 50 G's, think 200 G's up in the States. And think about this. If you're single and you want to live a pretty decent first world life down here in Latin America off the Gringos tourist trail, you could do that quite easily on around 15 grand a year. That would mean, let's take this example. Suppose you had a little nest egg of 150,000 bucks. And you came down to Latin America off the Gringo tourist trail and you decided to just sit around and drink margaritas by the pool all day long. And let's say you had no desire to start a business, make any extra money on the side. You were just going to whittle away at your nest egg. That would mean you could live around 10 years on that 150K. But here's the thing. I've been down here a long time now, more than 30 years. As if you didn't know that already. Are you getting sick of me saying that? I've been down here over 30 years. I kind of get the feeling if I don't say it once in a while, you new listeners just coming on board won't really buy what I've been saying because my podcast differs quite a bit from other expat podcasts in that a lot of those guys don't have enough boots on the ground to know what the f*** they're talking about. Anyway, about your nest egg, I hear that same concern from almost every newbie expat that comes down here. They say, is X amount enough or am I going to crash and burn? Then, after some time passes, and I run into these guys again, isn't it funny? I almost never see any of these guys who first came down and were so concerned deplete that nest egg. What I'm saying is almost all gringos and expats I know who get over the hump that first year of living down here, almost all of them, in the quest of finding something to do, something to occupy their time, they'll find some kind of niche, some kind of business, online, whatever, and that nest egg won't diminish. It'll grow. I've done the numbers. I've asked many expats and gringos who've been down here more than a year or two. I've asked them how much they came down with. What was their nest egg? And I'd say 90% of them will tell me they're worth a lot more now. And all that time in the early days, they were worrying for nothing. Now, whether that's adjusting for inflation or not, who knows? Because people, especially baby boomers, older gringos and expats, still carry around the notion that $1,000,000 is kind of the measure of really making it in this world. They rarely figure in inflation and are very surprised to hear that $1,000,000 today in 2022 was only worth about $300,000 in 1980. So if you happen to accumulate $1,000,000 in 1980, you'd have to have $3 million in 2022 dollars to have that same purchasing power. Though it's kind of a worldwide delusion, no matter what country you're in. People will say, oh, he or she's a millionaire. That's also their idea of really making it. However, the big flaw in that argument is that they're calculating that million in their own funny money. For example, in Guatemala, $1 is equal to about 7.5 quetzales, the local funny money. The locals on the street will often say so-and-so has a nice house in a nice neighborhood and a nice car or two because he's a millionaire. They're thinking in the local funny money, of course. If you do the math, you'll see that's only $133,000 U.S. dollars. A nice, tidy sum, but if you had that in a savings account up in the States, no one would ever say you're rich, you've made it, you're on easy street. Anyway, remember, if you're moving off the gringo tourist trail, multiply your nest egg by 4, and that's what the equivalent value would be up in the States. But also remember, if you're moving on or near the gringo tourist trail, you'll save on homegrown food at the marketplace and labor, like maintenance guys and cleaning ladies. But everything else will be close to first world prices. All right, now, let's go back to the expat living off the tourist trail who's living on $15,000 a year. That would be your average $1,300 or $1,400 a month Social Security check. Now, if that's all you had as income up in the States, first thing is you know you'd be living on the edge of poverty, or worse, depending on the U.S. city you lived in. However, multiply 15 grand a year by 4, you get $60,000, and that's about how you'd be living down here, a lifestyle equivalent to making 60 grand up in the States. Speaking of a much lower cost of living, that discussion leads us right into this email from Burke. He says, Johnny, I live in Florida and I'm putting together my plan B. But I've got this running argument with my family members, especially my brother who's a dentist. When I tell him things that you say, Johnny, like for example, dentistry is a quarter or even less than what dentists charge up in the States, his comeback is that dentists in the third world and outside the U.S. use cheaper, crappier materials. That's how they can get away with it. And that's as far as the argument gets. I've got no comeback for that. Though to his credit, he doesn't make any negative claims about the quality or training of the dentists in Latin America because there were a few Latin Americans in his own dental school graduating class. So he knows many of them had the exact same training as he had. So come on, Johnny, give me some ammo here. You see, we'll have the whole day together on Thanksgiving and my brother's kind of a know-it-all. And I want to be fortified with plenty of good comebacks. You keep up the good work. The shows are great. Signed, Burke from Tampa. Oh, and he's included a picture here of himself and his two big old dogs, Dale and Judy. Hey, and just as an aside here, being a longtime dog owner myself, isn't it funny how there's a short list of common dog names like Spike and Spot and Duke, King, lots and lots of cliche dog names, right? But when it comes to naming a dog with a person's name, somehow some of them just don't work at all. Some will work, but most you just can't get away with. They don't fit. Like, for example, Noah, Julian, Alexander, Penelope, Christopher, Abraham, Emmanuel, Nathaniel. Some human names just don't work at all for dogs. Come on, try naming your dog Xavier, Jordan, Vincent for a dog. Forget about it. Especially when they're outside and you got to call them or discipline them. You need a nice, short, tight name for that. But you have to admit, Nobel Prizes for the worst names in history have to go to rappers and reggaetoneros. It's as if they threw a box of alphabet soup and animal crackers into a septic tank, did an open-mouth swan dive, and took the name of whatever sticks to their gold teeth. By the way, my sister, the dentist, has worked on a couple of semi-famous rappers. She says their hygiene is deplorable. She says all those bulky gold solder joints are impossible to clean. They're terrible plaque and food traps. So those guys have perpetual halitosis. You got that, ladies? How sexy is that for French kissing? Yuck. Once again, I digress. I mean, I really digress there. So anyway, Burke wants some legit comebacks on why dentistry can be so cheap in Latin America. Well, first of all, dentists in Latin America sort of arrange themselves into loose co-ops. For example, you go to your dentist because your wisdom teeth hurt. By the way, wisdom teeth are called cordales here. Starts with a C. Cordales. Well, guess what? Unlike in the States, where they'll send you to an oral surgeon's office on another day, here in Latin America, they'll set you up an appointment in the same office, and the oral surgeon will come in with his little bag of tricks. He'll do the work not at his office, because he doesn't have one. He'll do it in your regular dentist's office. Same thing if you need a root canal or some periodontal surgery. Your dentist will make an appointment in the same office, even the same chair, and the specialist will come in with his bag of tricks and do it right there. That means the specialist, the endodontist, oral surgeon, periodontist, have no overhead at all. They don't have an office staff. That means no rent or employees or utilities to pay. You get it? Number two, Latin American dentists do not have malpractice insurance. Neither do physicians. It's just not a thing down here. It's not a litigious society. Now, my sister's a dentist and she pays about $20,000 a year for her malpractice insurance. And she gets sued about once or twice a year, as do most dentists up in the States. Though you almost never hear about it because they're settled out of court. So then why does that happen? Well, it's because nuisance suits are a racket. Lawyers for deadbeat patients know that if they sue for $5,000 or less, it'll never go to court and the dentist's insurance company will settle it and the dentist won't have to take a minute off of work. Now, admittedly, dentists are pissed about this system because most times they're not even in the wrong and would gladly go to court to clear their names, but insurance companies won't let them. They force the dentist to settle out of court. It's in the fine print of the contract. Insurance companies make those decisions, not the physician or the dentist in question, because insurance actuaries know damn well it would cost twice or more to bring the lawyers in for both sides, not to mention the delays and postponements. By the way, my sister tells me, and insurance reps will tell you too, there are certain Americans that are sue crazy. Some make it a habit of going around and suing different physicians and dentists. They're generally the same people who fall down in slippery parking lots and sue. Anyway, as it turns out, if one sues a physician or dentist for $5,000 or less, they'll get the money. It'll be a no contest. Because just the act of showing up in court for all the parties involved will cost a lot more than $5,000. That's how it is up in the States, but you knew that already, right? Oh, and know this. When it comes to lawsuits here in Latin America, any kind of lawsuit, one of the major reasons very few suits end up in court is because there's almost no such thing as a contingency case. In other words, lawyers want their money up front. They won't go to court, for example, on the promise of getting a third of the payout, something that's so common in the States. Oh, and another thing, if you take someone to court and you lose the case, you pay the other guy's expenses. So basically, there's no such thing as an ambulance chaser down here. Not yet, anyway. Though I did notice last time I was in Mexico, on TV and on big billboards, there were shyster lawyers with 800 numbers inciting people to sue. I understand that sort of legal sickness has spread to Costa Rica, too. Oh, and it's creeping into certain Latin American airports. I'm starting to see signs and billboards advertising to Latino travelers stating if they feel somehow they've been wronged by a party or a company up in the States. And I'll emphasize the up in the States part. They state, dial this 800 number and our bilingual law team will set up a conference call with you. Isn't that nice? Once again, you've got opportunistic, scumbag, shyster lawyers. This time, bilingual shyster lawyers taking advantage of the fact that up in the States, they'll take a case on contingency. That means even illegal aliens up in the States who've been mistreated by employers have the right to sue and get a big payout too. Man, talk about reason 8,430 through 40 why it's time to get the hell out of Dodge while you still can. Hey, can you digress a little more for us, Johnny? Now, where were we? Oh yeah, talking about the reasons why dentistry is so much less expensive down here. Reason number three, there are no dental hygienists. It's the dentist who will clean your teeth and give you a checkup for $50 or less. By the way, up in the States, the dentist pays his full-time hygienists between $60,000 and $80,000 a year. That's $30 to $40 an hour. So that's another expense not incurred by dentists here in Latin America. Reason number four, rent is a half to a third of what you pay in the States. Number six, the average dentist here in Latin America does not have a panoramic x-ray machine. They're too expensive. So dentists have developed co-ops once again. You know what I'm talking about. That x-ray machine that rotates around your head, gets a full 360 view. You see, down here in Latin America, they've got x-ray clinics. Your regular dentist will give you a little prescription to go get one of those tomographic or panoramic x-rays. And you'll walk into the place and realize everyone's there for the same thing. That's all they do there. It's the reason why you pay only $25 to $35 for one of those scans, as opposed to $300 to $400 for one of those up in the States at your own dentist's office. Why? Because that machine's $20,000 and the average dentist here in Latin America can't afford that. So instead, they co-op it between a large group of dentists. That way they get maximum use and efficiency out of that machine. Instead of maybe four or five of those scans a day in a single dentist's office, they can do 40 or 50 a day. And finally, the average dental assistant here in Latin America makes about $20 a day, or $2 to $3 an hour, which is about a third of minimum wage up in the States, right? While dental assistants up in the States often make five times as much or more. So Burke, there you have it. That's your Thanksgiving Day ammo to use against your brother, the dentist. Now Burke, you might not win the battle, but you'll win the war, because you're the one getting the hell out of Dodge, not your stressed out brother. By the way, there's something I forgot to mention earlier when we were talking about the email concerning Clint when he looked himself up on Google. Now, as most of you longtime listeners know, I pretty much don't have much of a presence at all on anti-social media. I'm not on Facebook, Twaddle, Dickcock, none of them. Though, the other day my brother phoned me up, you know, that stem cell poster child brother of mine. He said, I know you're not on Facebook. I know you're against it. But just for fecal matter and grins, he said, go on their main page and click on sign up for an account. Just go ahead and look at it. So I did. Talk about woke. You know what it says on the sign up form to get an account? Turns out, when selecting your gender, on the left, they got male. On the right, they have female and a sliding bar in between. So you can kind of pick your various percentage or mix of male and female. I know it depends how you're feeling at the moment and what you drank last night, right? Now, if that's not the definition of idiocy itself. Next, Fakebook asks you to select your pronoun. I shit you not. So, for all you sane guys and gals out there and those of you in between, if you're wondering just how woke the world can get and how far the pendulum will swing, well, I can tell you we're still in a full force swing toward crazy town. And there's no signs of stalling yet. And to think, I used to get irritated in the 80s and 90s when I'd meet someone and they'd say, hey man, what's your sign? These days, with that what's your pronoun crap, I don't get angry. I just want to pop them in the jaw. Of course, if I did that in the States, I'd end up in court. Luckily, down here in Latin America, with all that lag time and the fact that the Spanish language is solidly gender-based, I'd just never be faced with that eventuality. Down here, your pronoun's either male or female. That's it. Period. There are no whining pronoun police or pronoun ninnies. All right, now another email from a guy named Dave. You know, sometimes I think lots of Daves are writing me who aren't really Daves. I guess we'll never know. Anyway, Dave says, hi, John. Not sure if you like answering questions from people you don't know personally, but I'm going to ask, hoping you have some suggestions for me because I'm pretty sure you have most of the answers to this stuff. He says, I've been pondering this problem. What to do once I leave the U.S. and get out of Dodge? I'd still like to keep a U.S. mailing address after I sell everything, including my house. I'm thinking I'll be needing a U.S. mailing address for quite some time for things like banking and personal correspondence. The usual answer people tell me is to use a relative or a friend's address, though that could be inconvenient for both of us and put a little pressure on the relationship. Anyway, he says, I have neither. At least I don't want to use anyone I know like this. I need to be self-sufficient, not dependent on favors. Also, he says, some people tell me to use mail forwarding services for an address. I also see a problem with this because they're always identified as a mail forwarding service when you use the address. You pretty much don't seem to be able to fool the system with this. Please tell me what I might do to keep a legit U.S. address for banking and other personal correspondence. It would be much appreciated. Thanks a lot. Signed, Dave. Well, Dave the 21st or 22nd, whatever Dave you are, I have a virtual U.S. mailbox. And though since I've been away so long, I rarely get personal correspondence there, except the occasional birthday card from a family member. I do get my stuff from Amazon, eBay, and all the online stuff I order delivered there, and it gets to me in Latin America about a week later. I even bought a freestanding bathtub from Amazon. It came through fine. Weighed about 70 pounds. I was a little concerned it would come through damaged, but no, it was fine. Whether it's a card or a letter or something that weighs 50 pounds, it doesn't matter. It gets through fine. Though sometimes you keep your fingers crossed, like the time I ordered a Korg electric piano. Or that bass guitar amp that came through just fine, too. I've ordered audio equipment, 40 and 50-inch TVs, you name it, all of it. And I mean all of it has come through okay. Of course, all my vitamins and supplements are delivered through that mail drop box, too. And I think only twice things have broken along the way somehow. Vitamins from Amazon, but they replaced them, no questions asked. I just had to take a photo of the broken bottle, send them to Amazon customer service, and I got the replacements within 2 weeks. Of course, the thing is, Amazon doesn't know they get reshipped from Miami to Latin America. And that's most likely where the damage occurred, because they go to your Latin American country's aduana to assess taxes, if any, etc., etc. In other words, there's lots of manhandling and opening and reopening of packages before it gets to you. But Amazon and eBay, they don't know that. They just think, I'm in my jammy. They don't know. It was handed off many times before I ever opened it for inspection here in Latin America. Of course, in those very rare occurrences where the product got damaged, I had to pay for shipping again because they'll send it to Miami. And generally, it's free shipping from Amazon. It's always free shipping if it's over 25 bucks. Anyway, from Miami to me in Latin America, I got to pay something like $4 or $5 a pound. A matter of fact, there were a few times when my order was a very sensitive piece of equipment like that piano. I was taking a chance. If it came damaged, what was that going to do? Couldn't send it back. It's too big. But those manufacturers really know how to pack things. They're loaded with styrofoam peanuts and foam. Though that's not to say that once in a while when I go to pick up my boxes, I'll notice one's been caved in a bit. Obviously, hit pretty hard in shipping. That's when you wince a bit, thinking, man, how could it take a hit like that and not be damaged? but they always seem to survive. Matter of fact, when I was working as an engineer, I actually went to Michigan State University to the Packaging Institute. Yep, they've got what they call packaging engineers. I'm not kidding. It's a 4-year degree. It's big business, too, especially these days since everything's bought online and sent from China halfway around the world. Matter of fact, they've got machines that'll simulate a 4-foot drop off the back of a truck. You could program in any kind of whack or slam a package is bound to receive in transit. It's computers, not humans, that figure out where all that plastic packing goes. How about that plastic bubble wrap? Some people are addicted to popping that stuff. Are you? So anyway, Dave, you're right about one thing. You don't want to have an address that looks like a mail drop. That's quite easy to get around, and it's on you, not the mail drop itself. For example, if your mail drop address is 1564 Northwest 78th Street, Box 14, Miami, well, that's been flagged. It's a box, right? And some companies won't ship to a P.O. box. They say that right in the order. Well, here's the workaround. I've been doing it for years. First things first, when you sign up for one of those mailboxes, and it doesn't cost you anything, they'll give you a code that has to be included in your mailbox address, along with their real mailing address. For example, your code might be 2121. So then here's what you tell everybody who's sending mail to you, including Amazon. Let's use you, Dave, as an example. You're going to tell Amazon and all the people that correspond with you that your address in the U.S. is Dave Davidson, 1524 27th Street. That's the address of the mailbox. Apartment number, and you'd abbreviate the apartment, APT. Number 2121, Miami, Florida. So your personal code becomes your apartment number. You get it? All that counts is that you have the number they assigned you somewhere in the address. Though some people don't put apartment, APT, they put suite. But I'd rather use apartment. It sounds more residential. In fact, in all the years I've been doing that, I've ordered from some companies that say we do not ship to P.O. boxes. It still worked because I put my code in there as an apartment. Anyway, what happens then is you'll get an email from your mail forwarding service saying that your package was delivered to their headquarters in Tampa. They'll send another email when it's on the plane to whatever Latin country you're in. You'll get an email if it's a big box and it's being inspected in the aduana, and a final email that says it's landed at their office and you can come pick it up or have it delivered, your choice. But I never have it delivered. I don't want those idiot delivery boys on motorcycles to know where I live. So there you have it, Dave, how you could have a regular U.S. mail address that works like a charm.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.